Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva. And on this episode, we'll continue our discussion with Kelly Goodson and Mark Larson. Kelly and Mark, welcome back. So in the last episode, you gave us insights on why patients and their families feel accessing healthcare in the midst of COVID. We ended with talking about virtual health, and you left us hanging on some interesting insights that you learned about patients. So can you share with us what you mean?
Clearly, virtual health is a preferred method of receiving care by patients. But the insight that we learned this time around was that they don't necessarily want to access virtual care with new providers. They want their existing doctor to provide these services. So let me give you some numbers here. When we asked about how likely they would use certain virtual services, they told us they were either very likely, somewhat likely, or not at all likely. So the first one was, how likely are you to use a video visit with a new provider through a virtual health service? I won't name names. There's several out there. Only 22% said they would be very likely to use that service. So when we asked them about a video visit with their existing doctor, that number jumped up to 74%. And then we asked about texting, emailing, or telephone visits as well. In that same way, would you do that with a new provider? And that was only 21% very likely to do that. Yet almost 70% were very likely with their existing provider. And then we asked about remote monitoring or other virtual follow-up in the home. And 57% said they'd be very likely to do that. Now, interestingly, when you add in the somewhat likelies, those video, text messaging, emailing, telephone type visits with their existing provider goes all the way up to 93 and 94%. So a huge jump when you consider very likely and somewhat likely. And we didn't see that with the new providers, but barely got into the 60s, and patients are really interested in working with their current doctor.
So it actually tells us that the secret sauce to a continuous virtual platform is all based on the patient and the physician experience, and particularly that the patient is accustomed to the physician.
Yeah, and it really tells me that healthcare organizations would do well to honor that relationship between a patient and their doctor. I mean, it's central to providing care overall, right? Mm-hmm. Figuring out how to integrate virtual health into our existing care pathways for these elective procedures, for preventative care, it's really key. Patients want the least amount of exposure to COVID-19. That's their biggest fear, is getting COVID-19 while accessing care. So organizations that can figure out how to provide these services, which keep the patient connected with their existing doctor, but minimizes their risk of getting COVID-19, those organizations can really create a competitive advantage for themselves and improve loyalty that lasts far beyond COVID-19. I mean, I experienced this in my own personal life when COVID hit. I've got 3 kids that all have asthma and allergy issues, and we have to see the providers quite often. And I've had the typical virtual visits before with my kids for minor illnesses or cuts or scrapes. And it's been that sort of generic platform where I don't know the provider. They just sort of pop on the screen there and you kind of have a visit with them. And those visits are okay, but not hugely satisfying. But when my kid's asthma allergy doctor popped up on the screen, I just had a big smile on my face. It was our first virtual visit with them, their first time providing virtual visits, and it was a delightful experience. He just had a baby, and we were talking about his new baby, and he's so good with the kids, and it was just this great conversation like we were in the office, but we were safe at home. So it was just an amazing experience for me and my kids, and such a stark difference between sort of that generic platform with a provider that you don't know.
I think that's interesting, Kelly, is that personal relationship that you talked about and just even the experiences that you've had. And you know, I think the challenge with virtual that some organizations are facing is they're really trying to figure out, how do I get paid equitably for these services? And potentially, when a virtual service is provided, there may be lost ancillary revenue, and maybe that goes somewhere else for lab tests. So we have to overcome some of these financial barriers around that as well, and with the providers. And I think the other thing too is, how do we really maintain that opportunity, if you will, to have that relationship with the provider if virtual services are existing? And I think that those are barriers we need to overcome in the future.
So how will organizations overcome these barriers in the future? I mean, Mark, do you have any examples?
Well, Tom, you're asking the tough questions today. There's a few great examples, and I'm only speaking from conversations that we've had with clients. I think those that are in value-based reimbursement models really see virtual health as a tremendous opportunity to engage consumers and really provide healthcare more efficiently, whether that's refilling prescriptions, whether that's having asynchronous visits for very low acuity conditions, or even having face-to-face visits with the providers. So certainly from a value-based care model, virtual care fits really, really well. But also just in a fee-for-service, there are tremendous opportunities, but it requires a triage process. And you know this really well. We need to be able to have and understand what care can be delivered very well through virtual methods today. And then what strategies are we going to need to do to overcome things like how are we going to do lab tests? There are new lab tests available that can be delivered in the home environment directly to consumers. So how can we start integrating some of these pieces? So what that will allow us to do is over time, deliver care virtually to higher and higher acuity level patients. And certainly the other piece that we're going to talk a little bit more about is just really how do you integrate some of this home monitoring, these home monitoring capabilities. And again, as our survey indicated, consumers are very open to receiving home monitoring in the home environment. So they're not adverse to that. But again, we have to go back to the importance of that physician and the physician's leadership, not only to communicate and develop and maintain that relationship with the consumer and the patient, but also leading some of these initiatives in the health system. It takes the provider's leadership to make these really work.
I can certainly see where clinician leadership is going to be pivotal to making this work. So Kelly, I'd like to go back to communication. How can a healthcare organization alleviate patient and family concerns?
Well, as we've said several times now, getting COVID is really the biggest concern for patients, which is understandable, but the insight is that it's really personal, right? Their perceived risk of exposure to COVID-19 and how susceptible they are to actually contracting the virus largely determines if or when they will access care. So when we're thinking about communicating and alleviating these patient concerns, that's got to be our main focus, is how can we make them feel safe when it's their own personal perception of the risks and benefits. So there's a lot of details that we can provide to them. They want to hear data, like a detailed plan or a checklist with instructions to really help the patient and their caregiver understand what's going to happen, right? And they want their family caregivers with them throughout these procedures. So we have to really think about that as well, because someone might go forward with an elective procedure if their partner, spouse could be with them. So we need to really think about that as we're opening up and we're planning for these procedures and surgeries and trying to pick up utilization. Those are some things that we really need to think about. And of course, strictly following any safety or infection prevention protocols that you put in place is critical. And patients need to see that. They need to see people in cleaning the waiting room or cleaning the room. It needs to smell clean. It needs to look clean. And you need to do what you say. If you say everyone needs to wear a mask, then everyone needs to wear a mask. If you say this lobby is cleaned every 30 minutes, then I'm sitting there for 35 minutes. I should see someone cleaning in there. I mean, that's the fastest way to lose trust with patients and families, is to not do what you say you're going to do to make them safe.
It's incredible what you can learn when you just listen to your own customer, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Mark, can you provide us with any takeaways from these insights?
I think it's pretty straightforward, Tom, is we need physician leadership today more than ever. They always have leadership with their patients. When I say leadership, it's really around orchestrating their practice around what consumers are looking for during COVID-19, where these fears exist. As the resurgence occurs, you know, in these fall and winter months, we really need to consider those concerns. How do we make sure that we have the ability to actually provide some of these virtual visits to really help consumers not have to worry about coming into the clinic if that is a concern of those? And really supporting that change among the staff, whether that's the front staff actually scheduling procedures and services, or even having staff and clinicians maybe doing some of the triage so we can identify which patients can be handled virtually and which ones actually absolutely have to come in the office during this heightened risk of COVID. So there are a lot of possibilities. We need to highlight those possibilities and really the value of some of these new technologies that we have.
Do you have any examples of any organizations that reopened or renewed their elective procedures successfully?
Absolutely. And I think that's probably been the amazing thing of how resilient organizations have been during this. It makes me proud, honestly, to be part of the healthcare system and see how fast we've recovered. I could put it almost into three phases from what we've heard from our clients. Each health system has really taken their own approach toward addressing consumer COVID concerns, but these are the three things that seem to be common denominators since this really huge initial COVID push back in March and April. First was they really developed a marketing and communication strategy on safety, and they communicated that out on their websites through public relations and really helped consumers get to understand that there are safe places within the health system and they're doing things to make it safe, as Kelly had talked about previously. The second thing they did was really developing a strategy to reopen elective procedures. So everyone knew elective procedures just tanked, but they really built strategies around that. Which procedures should we move quickly? How are we going to get the staffing going? And then how, again, are we going to communicate the safety to consumers around those elective procedures? And then the third thing, and this has happened probably more recently, is creating new strategies for the road ahead. We're not going to go back to where we were 6 months ago. There are some tremendous opportunities. So really beginning to even think beyond COVID, and organizations are doing those today. All of this really requires a concise understanding of what the consumer wants. And as COVID resurges here, we may have to do kind of a rinse-repeat cycle here on going back out and communicating to consumers as safety concerns elevate during the most recent resurgence of COVID.
That's actually really great insights, Mark. Thank you. How about you, Kelly? Any last words?
We really need to remember that healthcare is personal, and our outreach to patients really needs to be personal as well. It's just not going to magically come back. Our utilization levels, you know, Mark mentioned, they're not back to where they were before. It's just not magically going to happen. It needs to be personal. And we can leverage patient and family advisors to help you do that, to help you craft your messages. It's a group that can help not only co-create the message, but really get that message out to the community through their networks as well. They are a powerful group, and you'd be wise to engage with them. And then lastly, can't stress enough about telehealth and virtual visits, that if you can integrate those approaches into these care pathways that we have set up, I think that's a key kind of a little secret to increasing utilization and really creating that loyalty even beyond COVID-19.
Kelly and Mark, we've reached the end of our discussion. You know, what I came away with is that the importance of clinical leadership on this and actually adding in the patient's voice as part of your strategic pillar. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.